Chapter 50. Spire Albion, Habble Landing, Ventilation Tunnels. Someone shook Major Espira awake, and he blinked his eyes open to find Ciriaco standing over him, his weathered face set.
"Sir, that woman's here."
Espira grunted and rose. He wasn't sure how much sleep he'd gotten, but it wasn't much, and it included dreams he planned not to remember. He climbed to his feet from his bedroll, stiff from the cold spirestone floor.
"Better ready the men,"
he told the sergeant.
"Yes, sir,"
Ciriaco said, and stalked off to do so. The warrior-born man's arm, though still badly burned, was no longer held at an awkward angle, and as he moved away, it swung naturally. Espira found himself wishing for a moment that his own family had carried some measure of warrior-born bloodlines. If he'd been born like Ciriaco, his back wouldn't be so uncomfortable right now.
Of course, if he'd been born like Ciriaco, he wouldn't be a major in the Auroran Marines either.
Espira tugged on his jacket, straightened himself, and strode out of the private little side corridor he occupied in his position as the commanding officer. As he appeared, the men were already rising and gathering their weaponry and gear. Cavendish and her pet monster were nearby, waiting. There was something tight and hard around the woman's eyes. Sark looked as he always did, but Espira had worked with the warrior-born long enough to realize that the slight dilation to the pupils of Sark's crooked eyes meant that he was tense and ready for battle. He'd been hoping for blithe, arrogant confidence from Cavendish. Whatever business she had done with the Albions, it hadn't gone precisely to her schedule. Whatever leverage she thought the hostages had given her must not have been enough. Espira gritted his teeth for an instant, then forced his jaw to relax. The lives of the two young women were worth a little less than nothing if Cavendish decided they had no value to her. And while he had no particular cause to dislike either of the young women, and would prefer to leave them bound and in place to be found later, he still would cut the ladies' throats himself, rather than leave them in the hands of Cavendish or Sark.
"Madame Cavendish," Espira said, bowing politely.
"Major,"
Cavendish said,
"I believe the time has come for us to act."
Espira arched an eyebrow.
"You think we should begin early?"
"I will signal the Armada, Major,"
Cavendish said, a frosty edge to her tone. The miracle of such rapid communication was all very well, Espira thought, but it wouldn't make an airship move any faster if it wasn't already in position.
"If I may inquire as to why you believe precipitous action is required, madame."
"I misjudged a man,"
Cavendish said.
"The same commander who defeated your men at the Lancaster Vattery."
"He's here?" Espira demanded. "And you did not see fit to tell us this fact?"
"He's one of their fleet washouts with a crew of privateers,"
Cavendish said.
"They aren't professional soldiers, and their numbers have been significantly reduced. But they can make a great deal of noise before your men wipe them out, and they might sap some of your strength."
"Where are they?"
"Judging by Captain Grimm's confidence,
they are coming here,"
Cavendish replied.
"Strike the primary and secondary targets and make for the extraction point. I want your men gone by the time they arrive."
"And leave a large mobile force at large behind us?" Espira asked.
"I will attend to them,"
Cavendish said.
"They won't be able to pursue. Where are the prisoners?"
Espira hesitated.
"Major,"
Cavendish said between clenched teeth.
"The hallway we blocked off," Espira said finally. He nodded down the proper tunnel. "Down there. What do you intend for them?"
"The same as I intend for the rest of the Spyrarch's merry band,"
Cavendish said, looking away, her eyes lit with some bizarre emotion Espira could not identify.
"Take your men and go, Major." If you value their lives, none of them will be standing in these tunnels 5 minutes from now.
Espira frowned at the woman, but she did not return her gaze to his. And then he nodded, bowed again, and withdrew. Ciriaco fell into step beside him. The grizzled sergeant glowered back over his wounded shoulder at Sark for a moment, then turned to Espira.
We're going early.
Yes. Dispatch the men as planned, immediately. Without the confusion of a general attack on the spire, we'll have to move fast. Tell them to leave all camp equipment and supplies here, except for a canteen. Weapons only.
Ciriaco frowned, but nodded.
Those two girls?
Rinaldo Espira had done a great many distasteful, necessary things in the course of his career. The orders of his superiors were generally given to him with the aim of benefiting those same superiors in some way. He was under no illusion about that. But even so, there was, somewhere within him, enough conscience to at least feel shame about it. He felt ashamed of the next words he spoke to the sergeant.
They're as good as dead. And no longer our concern, sergeant,
he said quietly. Ciriaco glanced at the corridor where the prisoners were being kept and clenched his large hands into fists with an audible crack of knuckles. He exhaled at once.
Sir, he said, world might be a brighter place without Sark and that woman in it.
Creating a brighter world is not our concern or duty, sergeant, Espira said without heat. From this moment, all that we need concern ourselves with is accomplishing our objectives and getting as many Marines as possible out of this madness and back home to Spire Aurora alive and well. Clear?
Ciriaco made a growling sound deep in his chest, but his hands relaxed and he nodded once.
Clear, sir.
He looked down at Espira. Think we can pull this off?
Of course.
Espira replied with a confidence he was not at all sure he felt. If each man remembers his duty and his training.
And doesn't stand around wondering why we're doing it,
Ciriaco said.
Ours is not to reason why, sergeant,
Espira said.
Tell the captain of each force to move out. I want every single man of my command out of these tunnels in 3 minutes.